This Coin Week podcast is brought to you by PCGS, celebrating 30 years as the standard in the rare coin grading industry. Visit PCGS.com to learn more. Oh, hi, Gary. This is Charles Morgan, editor of CoinWeek.com. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Charles. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great. For CoinWeek readers who may not be familiar with your career, you've been involved in American coin design for quite some time. Tell our readers and listeners who you are and what your role was in the Citizens Coinage Advisory Committee, the CCAC.
Sure. I'll give you a very brief history because it spans several decades at this point, but it all started when my mother gave me her blue Whitman penny book that she partially put together as a child. When I was 10 years old, I received that from her, and it just kind of caught my imagination, the whole realm of coins. And so I've been a collector ever since through my life. In 2005, I was living in Whitefish, Montana, and at the time, the governor from Montana was from Whitefish, and I knew him, and we were casual friends. And it was about that time that the U.S. Mint approached the state of Montana about the state quarter for Montana. And so I acted quickly and was able to get appointed to the committee that the governor was putting together for reviewing designs for the quarter. Became very active in that, took a leadership role on the committee, and ultimately became the master of ceremonies for the launch of the Montana quarter in Helena, Montana in 2007, I believe it was. At that point, I was able to meet Edmund Moy, who was the then director of the United States Mint, struck up a conversation afterwards after the ceremony, and at the same time I had been applying for a position on the CCAC, and one thing led to another, and several weeks later I got a phone call from Moy asking me if I'd be interested in serving on the committee.
And ultimately you became the chairman of the committee.
Yeah, I served for 3 years as a member, and the opportunity came up when Mitch Sanders stepped down as the chair to take on that role, and I did, and served in that position for 5 years.
Before we talk about the CCAC, let's backtrack a little bit. What was the design and selection process like for the Montana State Quarter?
Well, they had changed the design process at that point. The first state quarters, they actually were using designs from folks who were from the states. And then they changed that process along the way where they still took submissions from people with their ideas and thematic suggestions. But ultimately, they used art infusion artists or sculptor engravers at the United States Mint to produce the actual designs.
And this, I assume, was the result of the Quartergate controversy?
I believe so. I wasn't real involved at that point in time, but I know they had changed the process by the time it got to Montana. So we put out a call for design ideas in the state. As I remember, we received close to 500 ideas. Some of them were sketches and drawings. Others were narratives, and we as a committee ended up sifting through all of that, developing four or five themes that we then relayed to the Mint, and some back and forth with the Mint and some of the art. We went through a couple of evolutions on the art, and ultimately, and then the governor put out a kind of a informal online poll that people could vote for. I think there were five designs that were put out for Montana. The public voted on those. There was a plurality. There was no clear majority. And ultimately, Governor Schweitzer went with what I affectionately at the time called the Bonehead Quarter, which is the skull quarter, which I think many collectors are familiar with now.
And ultimately, it was the Secretary of the Treasury's decision to make which designs ended up on the quarter.
That's true. Yeah, it was the recommendation of the governors, and pretty much the Secretary went with those. But you're true. In an actual legal process, it was the Secretary's decision.
So explain for people who may not know, what is the design workflow for a United States coin from conception to execution?
Well, everything starts with the United States Congress, which, you know, is different than many countries. Some countries are more geared towards the artistic side of coins and metals. We start everything with legislation, and because of that, you get a lot of politics, and also you get a lot of design requirements written into law. So right away, our artists do have some limits, and you know, I'm aware that there are several programs that collectors have been critical of. Oftentimes, it's because of the parameters that are put around the programs before they're even on the drawing board for an artist. So it all starts with Congress. Once something is passed, then it becomes the responsibility of the United States Mint to execute it. They go about having, well, first of all, the process we use now, which changed during the time I was on the CCAC because of some recommendations that we put forward through the blueprint document, which we can talk about later, that the committee, both the CCAC and the CFA, should be involved towards the front end of the design process. When I came on the committee, all we were the caboose. We were the caboose of the process where when all the designs were ready, they assembled us all together and said, hey, pick one of these, and you know, if we didn't happen to think any of them were worthy, then we kind of had a train wreck. So what we did was to invest the committees into the front end where we had thematic discussions with Mint staff and with representatives of the art staff about how we should approach any given program, given the legal parameters that perhaps Congress has put on it, what are the themes that might be interesting for collectors and for circulating coinage. So with that thematic information developed, then the instructions would be given to whoever the assignment went to, whether it would be artists with the Art Infusion program or the sculptor engravers. The designs would be developed and eventually brought to both of the design review committees. We would go through our process of elimination and evaluation and make our recommendations. Sometimes the CFA and the CCAC are in agreement, as I think many of your listeners and readers may know, and sometimes we're not. And so ultimately, the Secretary of the Treasury makes the decision, and also the Mint Director too. A lot of people don't know that the Mint Director has a recommendation too in the process. So the Secretary ends up looking at the committee recommendations and input from the director.
So how nitpicky can the CCAC and the CFA be when it comes to their suggestions about design changes?
Nitpicky? Well, I suppose when we're talking about congressional gold medals and coins that are going to circulate or commemorate important events, we can become mighty picky. Sometimes I can tell you it was really tough because it was not infrequently that we would receive a portfolio, especially in the early years, where it was really tough to find anything we felt was worthwhile representing whatever the program might be. It did improve, I think, quite a bit by the time I left the committee last year. The quality of the portfolios has improved significantly. Some of that has to do with the fact that we promoted and we, the committee, promoted and recommended that more talent be brought on board through the Art Infusion program. There were 20 or so artists brought on through that program. We recommended that the sculptor engravers be moved out of the basement of the Philadelphia Mint. Very few people had the opportunity to go down and see the working conditions of the artists but the early years when I was on the committee, it was pretty horrendous. They were stuffed in a basement, and it was windowless and drab and not conducive to creative thought and production. They were moved upstairs through our recommendation to very nice, spacious quarters that they occupy now. I do think that helped elevate the whole artistic process. Also, the front-end loading of thematic discussions with the Mint staff and artists before designs are executed, I think that helped too. So, you know, through the time, the 8 years I was on the committee, I felt that all improved. But as far as your question about nitpicky, yeah, you know, it's important business because we're creating these metal discs that are going to represent our history and thoughts and commemorations for generations and decades, even centuries to come. This is a history of who we are at this time in American history, and I think to a member, every one of us took that very seriously.
So, Gary, you're also an artist, and I don't need to tell you, but art is, in many respects, personal to the artist. And it seems like it could be a cruel process to put your art and emotion into a project only to have it reviewed by a panel or a committee and get recommendations from people who were not involved in the creation of the art to make adjustments so that they would be pleased with it. I once asked John Mercanti, former chief engraver of the United States Mint, did you ever get criticism or feedback from the CCAC or the CFA that you didn't agree with? Well, he refused to answer that question on the grounds that, and I'd have to imagine he's given me a polite answer, that the CCAC and CFA had done nothing but help him in improving his art. But did you ever run into a situation where personal feelings got involved when the CCAC recommended that an artist change a design element here or there, that the artist responded that that isn't what they wanted to do with the design at all? I mean, does that ever happen?
You know, I don't ever recall that happening, Charles. I think that there were times when suggestions would be made and if other committee members disagreed, there was certainly debate among the committee members. Certainly also a give and take with the artist. But, you know, outright conflict or anything of that nature. No, it was a professional environment. And the artists and the Mint staff were always trying to be helpful to accommodate the direction that the committee went, knowing that ultimately it wasn't up to the committee. The committee only recommends. I often see in the numismatic press people being upset at the CCAC for this design or that design, when in fact those weren't even the designs the committee recommended. The committee only recommends, and ultimately the secretary decides. But I think in the hobby, the CCAC gets put out front. And whatever product comes out of the Mint, well, that was the CCAC's doing. That's really not the case often. I don't know if that answers your question.
Okay, let me ask you a different question. I'll do it by starting a sentence, and I'll let you finish it. Today's coin designs will never look like the classic coin designs because?
Because we live in a modern time when stylistic progression has changed how we represent ideas and commemorations on our coins. You know, Charles, I wouldn't advocate we go back to the old classics. I mean, certainly the classics have a really strong place in the heart and soul of America. It's part of our history, certainly in the heart and soul of many collectors, and that's right and good. However, ideas of, you know, national ideas now that are promulgated on our coins should be representative of who we are today as a people and as a nation, and our values, and also stylistically relevant to our time. So I've always argued, while there's a role for classicism, and even in my own artistic style, I have a streak of classicism in me, and it does influence what I do. But I think that our own times calls for our own artistic interpretation of these ideas and, like I said, commemorations that make their way onto our coins and our national medals as well.
It seems, though, that the U.S. Mint's most popular coin programs, the American Silver Eagle, which uses Weinmann's design, the American Gold Buffalo, which uses Fraser's design, the Gold American Eagle, another classic, it just seems that the market is telling us that, and it could be just because these are bullion coins and nothing else, but it seems to me that the market is telling us that these classic designs are what's wanted. And compare that to the new commemorative coin programs, a program that had a lot of excitement going for it in the 1980s, but now has a hard time selling through 50 or 60,000 pieces. Obviously, part of the problem, and maybe a large part of the problem, has to do with the conception of the programs themselves. The Girl Scouts, for instance, I'm told, didn't even market their commemorative dollar. But certainly design has something to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think a lot of it has to do with back in the classic times, there was much less bureaucracy and process involved and much more leeway given to true artists who created some of those great designs. Frankly, the problem we have now is we have too much process. Congress has become very active in, you know, in many cases dictating. You look at the U.S. Marshals program that came out a couple of years ago, and that was heavily legislated of what was going to be on which obverse, you know, half dollar, silver dollar, gold coin, what was going to be on the obverse. It was almost crazy. Then you've got the committee process, you've got Mint staff putting their fingers into the whole process. It didn't used to be that way. It used to be that true artists were given the ability in a much more free environment to produce art. Now we've weighed it down with so much bureaucracy and crap that sometimes that's what we get.
I'm reminded of the effigy mounds quarter design. It just seems that some of these motifs that come down the pike are just hard to execute to begin with.
That's a good point, Charles. I mean, what comes to mind for me most prominently is the America the Beautiful program, which is supposed to celebrate our national parks and national places. But you know what makes those places so special is the expansive beauty that many of them hold. And, you know, right. Those are best expressed through large, you know, paintings and photographs. And we're talking about a quarter, you know, approximately 1 inch in diameter. And so we end up trying to put vast scenery onto a 1 inch quarter. And it doesn't convey the grandeur, and therefore it fails, because a coin shouldn't be about pictures. It should be about designs.
You see that often when these design proposals come in and there's a lot of pencil work and elaborate shading in the sketches. They seem more like drawings than reliefs of coins.
You know, I always warned the committee when we were looking at portfolios with design proposals in them. We got these pretty drawings that were shaded and, you know, all this contrast. And you know what? That's just not what it's going to look like on metal. And we would commonly review an 8-inch circular rendition of the design. Well, you know, it's not an 8-inch coin. It's, you know, it's a quarter. It's a 1-inch coin. And what looks good on 8 inches looks very different on 1. So there are lots of things in the process that we do today that I don't think particularly lend to, you know, great designs. I think it can still happen, and I'm an internal optimist. And so as the chairman of the committee, I was always pushing the process to try to get it more towards favoring the artist. And you know, everyone knows me in the U.S. Mint. My motto was, it's all about the art. That's what it should be about, and that's what it was in the classical times. That's where I hope we can get back to. I think we've made some strides there, but we still have a ways to go.
Now, I know it seems like I'm really dumping on modern design, but let me give you a quote from way back, and let's see if you can figure out which coin in U.S. history is being described. This is a contemporaneous coin at the time of a major U.S. coin release. His models offered were not only in bad taste, but in such high relief as a consequence, that pieces could not be stacked and the relief had to be reduced to make the pieces available for any use. At times, high art goes crazy and the clack of a celebrity will rave over everything, but true high art ever conforms to nature, reason, and purpose.
I'd probably say St. Gaudens Double Eagle, but I could be wrong.
You're right. It was the St. Gaudens Double Eagle. And that coin design is considered one of the great coin designs in American history. And it's funny to me, if you go through The Numismatist, which has been in constant publication since the late 1880s, that almost every time a new coin program would come out, collectors hated it. They dumped on the St. Gaudens designs, they dumped on the Bigelow Pratt quarter and half eagle coins, they hated the reverse of the Jefferson nickel. Most Americans at the time had no idea what Monticello looked like until that coin came out. They were angry about the design of the peace dollar. I could go on and on. So it seems to me that we have people today that say, I like the old designs, they're better, yet they fail to realize that people back in the day did not like these designs either, that our appreciation of them grew once we grew accustomed to them, and once they had the weight of history behind them. The Mint couldn't wait to end the production of the Buffalo Nickel, but we love it today. I mean, I don't know if that's going to be the case with our contemporary designs. In ways, I kind of doubt it, because it seems that we live in a country now that has grown self-conscious about its own iconography. And with this endless slew of coin designs, that we really don't stick with anything long enough for the coin designs to become relevant to people.
That's true. And it'll be interesting to see over time which ones from the modern age grow in people and which ones don't. I think there'll be some of both.
Do you have any favorite modern coins?
There's many. I don't have the list in front of me. It's not a coin. It's the National Medal for the 9/11 commemoration that came out in 2011. I think that was very well done. Some great symbolism on there. And I really love that medal. The new high relief Liberty Gold that came out last year, which I'm excited that they're coming out with the proof silver this year. And I'm hopeful that program is going to start producing some real art that revives the iconology of Miss Liberty. So there's plenty we can talk about, but
I concur about the high relief coin. I think it's one of the most beautiful coins to have come out in the last 70 years.
Paul C. Ballin's flying eagle on the reverse of that gold is just wonderful. When you see that in the proof silver, it's just going to be absolutely fantastic. So I'm really looking forward to that program coming out.
So do you think that the Mint, you know, with the three coin centenary of the 1916 coin releases in gold, the high relief coin, the JFK gold coin, it seems to me that the Mint has found an avenue to make coins for collectors that falls outside of the normal legislative process. Is that what is going on here? I mean, by exploiting this loophole in the gold bullion coin law, are we seeing the beginning of the Mint changing the way in which these coin programs get made?
I don't know what I'd call it a loophole, Charles. I mean, Congress gave them the ability to reduce gold coinage so they can do that as they believe it's within the legislation. I think they see an opportunity to create something that collectors will find desirable and will buy.
So in other words, I guess the reason I call it a loophole, as we discussed earlier, coin designs come from Congress and are legislated down to the degree where the color of gold or the shape of the coin or the way the theme is depicted can be legislated by Congress. If now the Mint has latitude through this gold legislation to create whatever programs it thinks will be commercially successful, then this is a countervalence to the intention of Congress creating our coin programs. It's a different type of situation in that it opens the door for the Mint to design its own coin programs.
To some extent in gold, I mean, you're certainly not going to see, you're not going to see them do any kind of wholesale commemorative programs. You're not going to see them do, certainly they don't have the authority to do circulating coinage at will. There's a fine balance there just with the political workings between Congress and Mint leadership that pretty well keeps things in check. I can guarantee you that when they come out with an American Liberty gold medal or this 100th anniversary of the 1916 circulating coins in gold, I can guarantee you, I know for a fact, that was vetted through key committees on the Hill. Okay. So, you know, as far as the Mint kind of going rogue on Congress, that's just not happening. If they did, they'd get snapped back pretty fast.
I just wonder if the realities of the marketplace, with many of the foreign mints basically being able to create anything, is now having some impact on the strategy of the Mint in competing in the global market.
Oh, sure. You know, the U.S. Mint wants to be a leader among world mints, and so they're looking for every avenue to be able to do that, and also to deliver products that they believe their customers will desire and buy. And with some of these gold programs, I think they've proven that's right. So,
do you think we do a good job in terms of representation? That is, do you think our commemorative coin programs and circulating coin programs today do a good job in honoring and representing the diverse cultural and ethnic backgrounds of the people that make up America?
Well, you know, there's been a talking about cultural and racial themes. Certainly, there's been a lot of activity in the area of Native American heritage. With the Code Talker Medal Series. My gosh, that was a huge series of congressional gold medals that the Mint put out. Also, the Native American dollar program. I know that the 2017 American Liberty gold and I hope silver medal program is going to have an African American Liberty. That design's already been selected. So, you know, there's been the Congressional Gold Medal on the church bombing from 1963 as part of the Civil Rights movement. There was the commemoration of the Civil Rights Act, that program. So, you know, I think if you look through the catalog of recent United States Mint issues, you find a lot of cultural issues and themes addressed.
Do you think that there's a need for U.S. coinage reform in the sense that we're basically stuck in an early 20th century paradigm where we have the penny, nickel, dime, and quarter as the only circulating coins? We still make, as a matter of tradition, the half dollar and dollar coin, but they don't regularly circulate. And you could make the argument that the penny and the nickel are now essentially worthless. Either we find ourselves in a situation where coinage will become increasingly obsolete, or it seems to me that they will have to reconfigure our nation's coinage denominations. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. I mean, the ravages of inflation over time on our denominations of coins has been, you know, phenomenal. The half dollar used to be the coin of the realm, you know, early 60s and before, you know, and there was a time when a half dollar was, you know, the value of a $10 bill or even a $20 bill in the 1800s. It doesn't have that value, and it doesn't even circulate anymore. And instead, we still have the penny and the nickel, which, like you said, is, and I have to agree, almost valueless. You find them laying around in parking lots. People just don't see the point in even keeping them, or they end up in drawers and sock drawers and collecting, and then U.S. Mint continues to produce them so we can sock them away in our sock drawer some more. So I think that our denominations increasingly don't make a lot of sense. We're kind of locked in tradition, I guess. A lot of that has to do, again, with politics and the relationships that certain metal manufacturers have with certain members of Congress you know, things don't change because of that. So, you know, and then the whole vending industry, their equipment is geared to certain types of coins, and they read the metal content of a coin, and so if you change it, then you're causing millions of dollars of upheaval in industry. And so that weighs heavily on representatives in Congress. So there's a lot that goes into why we have the denominations we have. But I would have to agree with you, Charles, that they're really kind of outdated as far as value goes. And I'm hopeful at some point we can modernize ourselves like many other major nations around the world have already done.
Well, one of the things I did a few years ago as a thought experiment, I led a charge to have collectors spend $100,000 in golden dollar coins, which we actually did. And I don't know, it was within a few weeks of this process, I would go to the bank and get all the golden dollars they had. Amazingly, most local banks do have these coins. It's just that they don't tend to pay them out and few people ever ask for them. And we'd go out and spend them. I'd fill up my gas tank with them or buy lunch, usually smaller transactions. And what I figured out right away was that the dollar just isn't valuable enough a coin to be a spending coin. What I mean by that is that the dollar is enough value to get back in change, but it's not enough. I mean, you don't want to have a roll of coins in your pockets when you go buy lunch. Nobody would want to do that. And it just seems to me that we should get beyond the concept of a dollar coin being a heavy lifter and get to the point when we start looking at a $2.50 or a $5 coin being a heavy lifter. Today's dollar coin is essentially worth what a quarter dollar was in terms of buying power from when I was growing up in the 1980s. In other words, it doesn't buy you a lot.
No, it doesn't. Even a $10 coin, Charles, wouldn't be, I think, out of reason.
Yeah, sure. But you aren't going to get that done because the banknote industry has such an effective lobby and that they're not going to concede the $1 bill, the $2 bill, the $5 bill, and then the $10 bill so that the mint can produce higher denomination coins. And so because of that, it makes me kind of dim on the prospect of the future of coins in the United States.
Yeah, it's a challenge for sure. And everything you say, I agree with.
So tell me, what are you doing now, Gary?
Well, you know, I've started a American Liberty series of silver 1 ounce medals that began in 2014. And I put out a unique design every year. So I'm into my third year right now. Some of the folks listening probably have some of my medals. The first one was one that I call Liberty's Glory. Last year, 2015, was Liberty's Beauty. And this year is Liberty's Legacy. The Legacy one was an intentional attempt to be reminiscent of the classical style. And so my current year silver Liberty medal looks like it may have been produced perhaps in the 1910s or 1920s. But that was my intent. And then next year I'm beginning planning the 2017 medal, which probably is going to be the theme of Liberty's Defense, which I think will probably be fairly popular with the folks who collect my medals. I've done some commission work with a local medical college here in my town. We did a medal as a fundraiser. I've done one for a personal friend of mine who's a philanthropist who wanted a personal coin. I just got done doing one for a fire district for their challenge coin, but this will be like no other challenge coin produced before because it's actually artistic, not a Chinese knockoff.
Okay.
And I'm also working on a line that I started in 2014. I wanted to have my own, I wanted to create a denominated coin, which is still really actually a metal, but so I created my own fantasy country. I call it Mark Sova. Produced a medal honoring my wife. I deemed her to be the Grand Duchess of Mark Sova. That medal is highly sought after by a small segment of the art medal world. It sells for quite a lot of money on eBay. I'm planning on coming out with a couple more Mark Sova medals this year that I really haven't even announced that yet, so you're hearing it first. So I've got several, you know, in the queue here that should be coming out very soon.
And how would somebody be able to purchase these items?
Well, you go on my website, GaryMarksArt.com, and you can see what I have currently for sale. But not everything that I have created is any longer for sale. But there is a gallery section, art gallery section on my website that you can go to that tab and check out the whole catalog of what I've produced, not only my medallic art, but also my paintings as well. So that's where you would go. I know people can also find my work on eBay, by searching for my name or the whole Liberty series.
Something else I know you're working on is the restoration of an authentic Native American totem pole. Tell us a little bit how that process is going. It sounds both interesting and complex.
Yeah, well, you know, the city where I live, I also happen in my other life, I'm the city manager of Lebanon, Oregon. So I run a local government, and we are looking to do a facelift on our downtown and enliven it. And there's a pocket park there that years and years ago, there were representatives of some of the local tribes who carved a authentic Native American totem pole and had it placed in the pocket park downtown. The ravages of time and weather have really taken a toll on it, and it got to the point where either we needed to discard it and let it rot naturally, which would be the Native American way if you were going to abandon it, or to restore it. And so as of my own artistic challenge, I've decided to take that on, and just last week spent 3 days of doing nothing but working on the totem pole.
So what shape is it in? Do you feel that you'll be able to successfully rehab it?
Well, yeah, I think it's going to, you know, first I didn't know what I was getting in for. It's about a 30-inch round western red cedar log that it's carved out of, so the cedar was in its favor. Cedar weathers very well, especially in the Pacific Northwest, wet climate. There were pockets of rot, and I'm removing those, but nothing so egregious that it really steals the original sense of design of the totem pole. So I was really pleased to find that. So I'll just need to continue prepping the surfaces, and ultimately I'll be repainting it, and it'll be reinstalled back in the park.
Well, that sounds great. I look forward to seeing a photo of that, Gary, and I would like to thank you for taking the time to talk to us and sharing your deep background in the process of developing the American coin programs of the last few years. Good luck with your many projects, and we hope to talk to you soon.
Thanks, Charles.
Okay, thanks.